And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good Monday morning to you. It's 4 minutes past nine. It is Monday. It's the 16th of September, 2024. And you're very welcome along to another brand new fresh week of the 9 till noon show. Welcome back to Caroline Orr after her well-deserved break researching and producing the show today. You can contact her and Shannon if you wish on 07491 25,000, 07491 25,000, or WhatsApps and texts to 086 60 25,000. If you want to send your voice notes to that number, feel free. And emails, if that's your thing, comments at highlandradio.com. And don't forget, if you're listening to the podcast or our overnight repeat, feel free to get involved in the conversation, raise your issues. Just because your life might not suit listening to us between 9 and 12, it doesn't mean that your views and opinions are any less important. And of course, if you are at home or it suits you, you can watch the show live on your smart TV or your Fire Stick on the YouTube app. It's Highland Radio Ireland. Give us a like and a subscribe. It's very useful. And also, you can watch us on X at Highland Radio, and right across our Facebook pages as well. It's great to have you on board, however you choose to join us. So as I say, if there's something that you want us to talk about over the weekend, or something that's important to you, or an issue you might need some assistance with, please let us get behind you. Contact us on the details I outlined there. Loads to come on the show today, of course, but let's start with a look at the newspapers and the Derry news. The British government has confirmed the city deal for Derry will go ahead as planned. There are widespread shock on Friday after the government said that it would pause funding for the North's four city deals, which include Derry. The signing of the £300 million city deal for Derry is due to take place on Wednesday. Earlier this year, Derry and Strabane District Council unveiled ambitious proposals to revitalise Derry's riverfront and city centre using the city deal money. The Donegal news this morning: Gallagher putting his best foot forward, having been selected at the party convention on Thursday night in the Clanry Hotel in Letterkenny as one of two candidates to contest the next general election for Fianna Fáil. Pat the Cope Gallagher is optimistic that he can win back the seat he lost in 2020. He'll run alongside Minister Charlie McConnell Ogue, who was also selected uncontested in the two-candidate strategy, and will be hoping to keep his seat and his voice for Donegal in the cabinet. Of course, also, he'd hope to keep his cabinet seat as well. I presume that's not a fait accompli. We aim to win two seats this time, like we did in 2016, and I'll be fighting for the second seat, Pat the Cope Gallagher told the Donegal News there. Let's go to the Irish Independent now, and I'm sure many of you, or certainly those around you, are waiting on a driving test. It's a pain in the bottom because it's very expensive. You have to do all your lessons now, don't you? And they're looking to increase the amount of lessons that you have to do. And then when you have got to that benchmark of the lessons that are required, you stick in your application and you're told that you'll be invited to apply for a lesson in 2 or 3 months' time or 4 months' time, and then you keep checking that and it keeps being pushed back, and it can be very frustrating. But a lot of those spaces, a lot of those timelines could be sped up if people actually turned up for their tests, it would seem. So I'll read on here. Ireland faces a worrying increase in the number of motorists failing to show up for scheduled driving tests amid fears the number of no-shows could soar above 8,000 this year. So that's 8,000 slots that aren't being taken up. A total of 6,441 motorists did not attend scheduled driving tests last year, despite having paid €85 to the Road Safety Authority for the assessment. That involves a monthly average of 537 motorists failing to show up test centres for scheduled appointments. Road safety groups, including Park, expressed alarm at the revelation that the number of no-shows has surged this year to a monthly average of 692. That's a hike of 29%. Park said that while some people might not attend a scheduled driving test for a genuine reason, the fact that others were not showing up was intolerable, given that it's deprived another learner driver of a chance to sit their test. So clearly, obviously, we all know life throws things up where you can't turn up for a test. But that being said, the amount of no-shows is really quite high. In Donegal, it's 102. So the number of no-shows and total fees retained by the RSA. So there was 102 scheduled tests in Donegal, and between January and July, 102 people didn't turn up. The RSA collected €8,670 in the process as well, and were quite high. Sligo, 52. Mayo 96. I'm just going to get down the west coast. Galway with a larger population, of course, 185. Clare 90. Limerick 220, which has a city. Kerry 134. Moore Century, Offaly 100, Leash 65, Westmeath 113, Kildare 202. But anyway, in Donegal it's 102, which I think if you were to factor in the percentage of population, that is particularly high. It seems particularly high, but it's a kick in the teeth, isn't it, for all of you out there with young ones or not so young ones waiting to get legally on the road, and 102 people had a slot and didn't use it. Very frustrating. The Irish Times this morning tells us that the FBI is investigating an apparent attempt to assassinate Donald Trump, another attempt. The FBI said yesterday it was investigating what appears to be an attempted assassination of former US President Donald Trump and has responded to the scene at West Palm Beach, Florida. In a statement, the FBI said the FBI has responded to West Palm Beach, Florida, and is investigating what appears to be an attempted assassination of former President Trump. He was out playing golf and some of his security was ahead of him. And they noticed what appeared to be the barrel of a rifle sticking through a fence. I believe they shot fires in that general direction. And the person with the gun, it was an AK-47 rifle with a scope, fled the scene in a SUV. Some clever member of the public took a picture of that and they were able to track this guy down. But he seemed to have the intent of assassinating President Trump, and also to, it's reported that he is a Ukrainian sympathiser, but then again, many people are. On to the Irish Daily Mail now, and retailers are pleading with government to introduce a package of supports for the industry, warning that rising costs, ever-increasing crime and antisocial behaviour is decimating businesses. Now, we're going to talk about this a little later on, we think, but if you are a business, a small, medium business, and it's a difficult one, isn't it, because your business is private. But if you want to perhaps talk about the difficulties of being in business in this day and age, you know, with the increased costs that businesses are facing, not least increases in the minimum wage and the impact it might have on you, because an awful lot of the businesses that are going insolvent at the moment are small and medium enterprises. And the majority of those are hospitality businesses or food and drink businesses as well. So maybe you're in that sector, and you are hoping for some government support in the next budget and you want to give us your insight, please get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. Retail Excellence Ireland said the government could use some of the $14 billion it reclaimed from Apple in backdated taxes to fund the supports. REI made this appeal as it announced the membership of a new umbrella organisation called SME Alliance, which has called for a range of measures to be introduced, including changing the calculation of the minimum wage to reflect the fact that nearly half, 48% of the workforce, are employed by the public service or multinationals with far higher salaries. What do you think about this? There is talk, I don't know if it'll come to pass, but there is talk that Oasis could be supported in the Irish legs of their tour by the Wolf Tones. Now, would this? I saw some people on Twitter saying they wouldn't go, which is complete nonsense. Said they wouldn't go if the Wolf Tones were supporting. I'm not sure if it's because they don't like the music. If they don't like the music, go for a drink while they're playing. Or is it a political? Would it be a political statement? I don't know ins or outs of it. But what do you, if you're Oasis tickets, do you feel they become more valuable if the Wolf Tones were to support them or not? The story comes from the Wolf Tones legend Brian Warfield. He said that the band could reunite or would reunite if Oasis asked them to their ongoing act at opening act at Croke Park, as Liam Gallagher declared, "Let's do it." The Irish folk band are set to retire next month after a stellar 60-year career, but Warfield told us that the Wolf Tones would reunite if got the call to support Oasis next year. He told us, this is the paper, "We would be delighted. I think we will come back for that. I love them and I'd love to be on there with them. It would be great fun." It comes after Liam Gallagher teased that the Irish ballad band could open for them when they play Croke Park next year on August 16th and 17th in Dublin. You may be familiar with, and I'm sure you are, Jay Blades. He is effectively the face, the manager of the very popular BBC show called The Repair Shop. And his career was going into the stratosphere, who was the face of everything new that seemed to be commissioned across BBC and the other channels. But perhaps his wings have been clipped, because BBC star Jay Blades, he's wears a cap and glasses if you're trying to imagine who that is. He's facing a second court case for allegedly using his mobile phone while driving. The repair shop host, charged last week with controlling and coercive behaviour towards his wife, is due in the dock tomorrow for the phone wrap. Furniture restorer Blades, 54, who is set to appear at Cannock Magistrates Court, has pleaded not guilty to the alleged driving offences, which of course aren't a game changer for him. But the charges or allegations of coercive control and coercive behaviour are very problematic for him and his career. And finally, we'll be talking GEA later on with Brendan, of course. A lot of you would have been watching the golf yesterday, and Rory McIlroy kind of did what Rory McIlroy kind of does lately, and he had a win in the palm of his hand, and he's an outstanding player, and his record is amazing, but he just let it slip. Dan beat Rory McIlroy, rude another near miss, as he threw away the Irish Open to Rasmus Hoogard yesterday. McIlroy looked set for a second Irish Open win. I thought he'd won it four times, but anyway. McIlroy looked set for a second Irish Open win when he led by two shots with four holes to go at Royal County Down, under an hour from where he grew up. But while Hoogard completed a closing 65 with four birdies in the last five holes, including three in a row from the 16th, McIlroy three-putted the 17th, and that was his downfall, and then missed an eagle putt by a fraction on the 18th. Now, if he had got that eagle putt, that would have been remarkable. That would have been one of the holes of his career. He was very close, but the damage was done on the 17th. Okay, that was a run through some of the stories that are making the newspapers today. If you have a say in any of that, you know the contact details, don't you? Taoiseach Simon Harris is set to visit Derry for the first time as Taoiseach for a series of engagements with political, civic society and community leaders. During his visit, the Taoiseach will announce the allocation of €7.6 million from the Shared Ireland Fund. This for initiative to link the Wild Atlantic Way that runs, as we know, from Kinsale in County Cork to Donegal's Inishowen Peninsula to the Causeway Coastal Route, which runs from Derry to Belfast. Joan Crawford is manager of the Wild Atlantic Way at Fulcher Ireland and is with us now. Good morning, Joan.
Good morning, Greg.
This is, I presume, positive news to extend the Wild Atlantic Way. Is that how you see it, Joan?
It is indeed. The Taoiseach's here today to mark the positive progression of the Shared Island Wild Atlantic Way Causeway Coastal Route. We have a tourism brand collaboration group that is working on this project. So that's Fulcher Ireland, Tourism Northern Ireland and Tourism Ireland. And it's all about us creating those synergies between the Wild Atlantic Way and the Causeway Coastal Route. We both work, we work very closely with our partners in Northern Ireland, but this 7.6 million funding, it's just given us an opportunity to create additional opportunities for the tourism trade in the international market.
I'm not being negative or anything like, but I mean, we're at the end of the Wild Atlantic Way. Is there any concern that we could just be a stop off and it could be any disadvantage to us if the end, in inverted commas, is somewhere else?
Well, we look at the Wild Atlantic Way now and we're 10 years old, Greg, and our biggest opportunity for us within the team is growing that business north of Galway. And we all know how important that access point for Belfast and for Derry and for Donegal Airport are for us. And it can be flipped. We could be seen as being the start of the Wild Atlantic Way as opposed to the end, which is always
that's actually a really good point. Here's me sitting in Donegal saying we're at the end of the Wild Atlantic Way. But anyway, go ahead, John. You're quite right there.
Yeah. And for us now, the tourism, you know, the 7.6 million, it's looking at doing a small grant scheme for visitor attractions to enhance the visitor experience. So it's looking at those all-weather attractions. Given the summer that we've had this year, it's an ideal opportunity. So there'll be 1.2 million spent between Donegal, small part of Leitrim and Sligo on visitor attractions. We're also looking at marketing opportunities within the GB. And we want to upskill the trade in terms of getting them out into the international market and selling those experiences.
And Joan, at this point, do we know the path of the Wild Atlantic Way, you know, once it exits Donegal?
Once it exits Donegally, we have the 2,500 kilometres that takes us right down into Mizzen Head. What we're doing in the northern half is, because the coastal route, their route would not be as defined, so they're looking at defining that route, looking at the development of discovery points. So you're creating that synergy between the Wild Atlantic Way and the Causeway Coastal Route. A visitor does not see borders, and it's really important for us that the visitor journey is smooth and they don't see, you know, the difference.
Yeah, and also, too, it just helps with planning, because an awful lot of people that are travelling Ireland in that way, they tend to go from Donegal into Northern Ireland in any case. So really, this is also meeting a market that's already there and growing that market.
Yeah, and if you look at the development, like, we have the Causeway Coast gets 1.2 million visitors. We're working extremely hard in terms of developing those iconic attractions north of Galway that's going to attract those international visitors that are coming into Causeway Coast. So we'll see Fort Dunree coming on board, and hopefully we'll have a new development in Malinhead in the coming years as well. And the investment that has gone into Slieve League will be enhanced under the shared island funding also.
Yeah, and we're in an advantageous position, aren't we? Because, as you say, we're a decade into the Wild Atlantic Way, and it has proved incredibly successful. I mean, we would love to have seen more of a share of the footfall, so to speak, you know, north of Galway, as you've been mentioning. But that's the piece of work now, because we can also start drawing visitors that went to the north into the northwest as well.
Yeah, our big concentration on the markets are the French, the German, the GB and the American markets. We know that they're warm to the Wild Atlantic Way, and they're markets that come, stay longer and spend more. So that economic benefit, you know, it's not about a mass of numbers. It's about getting people to come, stay longer and spend more.
Mm-hmm. And it's measurable too, because even when there was some disruption to flights or the threat of flights, like, it was measurable how much that would cost us, even though it was in a short period of time, because a lot of those that would have been flying in were high spend tourists.
Yeah, tourism is very, very, is very open to other economic conditions, and that's something that we always have to be mindful in terms of development in the long term.
Okay, brilliant stuff. We look forward to see how the plans unfold. Joan, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
Joan Crawford there, manager of Wild Atlantic Way at Fulcher Ireland. Now, you would have heard just with the jingles at the start of the show that we welcome, I'll come back to that in a second. It is, can I pronounce it? It's Breddens, isn't it? Because I think I might have pronounced that wrong previously. It is Breddens. I'll just double check that, because Breedens, exactly. I knew I'd got that wrong, and I've actually been up there shopping, believe it or not. It is Breedens, because I made a mistake before. So delighted, if you heard the jingles a little earlier on, we welcome Breedens House to Homebridge End and Maville on to the family. They are sponsoring the show this week. And thanks to Breedens, we have a €200 voucher to give away each day, which is really generous. So if you want to win that €200 voucher today, thanks to our friends at Breedens House and Homebridge End, we are giving you an anagram. And it's Bleat, B-L-E-A-T. And we're asking you to rearrange the letters to make a word. And we're looking for an item sold at Breedens House and Home. So it's an anagram, B-L-E-A-T. If you move those letters around, what might you be able to purchase from Breedens House to Home at Bridge End? Text your answer, name and address to 086 60 25,000 to be in with your chance to win this great prize. A very generous €200 voucher every single day this week. So rearrange these words, or these letters, sorry, B-L-E-A-T, into the name of a bit of furniture that you can buy from Breedens House to Homebridge End, and one of you will win a €200 voucher. I'll mention that a little later on as well, of course. 086 60 25,000. I was sent a video, and we're just digging through it at the moment, and it seemed to be in the Twin Towns of what also appeared to be a group of individuals, young individuals, assaulting another young individual. I'm not sure if you witnessed that or if you've seen it or if you have anything to say about it. As I say, I don't know when it was. It's like a lot of these things, I have to do a bit of due diligence. I don't know when it was recorded or precisely where and when it was, but it's something I'm unaware of. And I suppose if any of you out there have anything to say about that or know anything about that, particularly in that area, 086 60 25,000. We're joined on the programme by Pauline now. Hi, Pauline.
Hello.
How are you,
Greg,
getting on?
Good morning. Good, thank you.
All right, so tell us what you witnessed. Tell us what you witnessed last week, Pauline.
In Letterkenny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last Wednesday, I was in Letterkenny, and I was driving along the road, that new road that past Dunn's stores along there. And I just witnessed a lady falling, having a bad fall.
Oh, no.
And I was fair lashing the rain. And there was a man with her, an elderly man. So I presumed it was husband and wife. And she was lying, I saw her actually falling. So she was lying on the ground. So I drove all round, and I had my wee niece with me.
Mm-hmm.
And we drove round into the car park behind where they were. But just at that, another young fella came to assist them. And he was a young foreign fella, lovely, young mannered man. So I went to them, and the woman, oh my God, she was in an awful state. Her and the husband both. She was bursting to the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
And she was told that the nearest toilet was over at McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
So she was trying to cross the road there and over the barrier, you know, the short barrier, the low barrier.
Yep.
And she caught her foot on the barrier and just landed right on her back.
Oh, no.
Her burst into the toilet to be told there's no toilets over there. Now, these two were in their mid-80s. And they were actually from down south. They were on a bus tour from down south. So I gave her my coat and got her sorted and got her into my car and took her over to a restaurant way on, a good bit over, way over near the cinema, to use the toilet. And now she did contact me since, because I'd given her my number, and she did contact me the last evening to tell me she was very sore and hurt. So she was going to her own doctor on Friday she rang me. Because I wanted to take her up to A&E. But she felt she was okay. I think she was so embarrassed.
Yeah, and sometimes with those injuries, it can take a while before the full pain and extent of the injuries comes to pass, Pauline.
Yeah, I know that because I work with elderly.
Right, okay, exactly. So you do know.
So I know all about it. You know, but just the poor woman, she was, oh my God. And the husband and I took him over there and got the man and got him sorted with a cup of tea over in the cafe and that.
Well, fair play to you, Pauline. But this just highlights the importance of public toilets, doesn't it? Because this lady and her partner are up visiting, and they only had to make that journey out of desperation because she was desperate for the toilet. No public toilets in that space.
No.
So she would never have fell if she didn't need the toilet. And it is a very popular, big, well-developed area. Astonishing that I'm still hearing people on this programme talking about the fact that there's no public toilets there. It's crazy.
Yeah. My heart went out to the poor woman. And she didn't even know the town. She didn't even know where McDonald's was. She was only searching for it.
Mm-hmm.
She hadn't a clue.
Yeah. Well, we see we're still talking about it. There are plans for public toilets down at Letterkenny Retail Park. But at the end of the day, we need them, don't we?
Well, we do, of course.
Yeah, okay.
For everybody, not just the outlet, for everybody. You know.
Lots of people need toilets more regularly than other people do. I mean, that's a fact, you know. And it's not always because someone might be, you know, maybe pregnant or they have some other condition. Yeah. But lots of people need the toilet when they need the toilet.
You need it when you need it.
Yeah. All right, okay. Well, listen, we'll do a checkup, but we'll be told that plans are well advanced and they'll be put in place and everyone's campaigning for it and all this kind of stuff. And that's grand.
Yeah.
I'm not being negative there. But at the end of the day, let's just have the toilets. You know, less of the talk, more of the toilets.
Yeah.
All right, fair play to you, by the way.
This lady's just going to be left with an injury.
Yeah. But do you know what? Thank God you were there and that other young lad was there.
Yeah.
Because it would have been very dehumanizing to be lying in the rain and also desperate for the bathroom.
Yeah.
So she had the right people to call on. All right, Pauline, listen, thanks for helping us highlight that again. I do appreciate
it.
All right, okay, thanks very much indeed. Yeah, it is a crazy situation that the toilets aren't there. The council have said they're making every effort to expedite the process. Councillor Jimmy Cavan has been amongst those who've been campaigning for it. And now it's been saying, well, let's make them a changing place facility, which is fantastic. We need those as well. But is that going to slow down the provision? Is there no measure we can have in the interim so that we hear about these cases, but lots and lots of stuff like that happens and we don't hear about it? Regarding car insurance, a listener says, my son's insurance came on Friday. His premium is up from €650 to €985. The justification was that insurance costs have gone up. Legislation is in place to stop this. Multinational companies are robbing this country blind. Some reward from your current insurer. I wondered, did he shop around since and did he have any success in that regard? 650 to 985. You know, you're expecting it to go the other way, aren't you? A caller says, see where supposedly there was another assassination attempt on Donald Trump. That's another attempt to boost his election. I don't subscribe to that, but that doesn't matter what I think, does it? Firstly, the first one, he got shot. Part of his ear was damaged, though it seems very well repaired now. And that was all forgotten about in a week or two. I think that campaign is so intense and there's so much vitriol and it's so much one side versus the other that even getting shot in the head, albeit your ear, doesn't stay on the news cycle for very long. But the FBI and independent agencies to the Trump campaign were responding to that. And I can't imagine them being complicit in that. But that's your view and that's fine. What a great idea to have DeWolf Tones support the Gallagher brothers, a.k.a. Oasis. Another caller says the Polestar lights being broken and the traffic flowing better showed we do not need more lights about town. What we need is a ring road or at least a second bridge over the Swilly indeed. And most people, including those who make those decisions, concede that. We had Minister Alan Dinnell on the show last week and we received a letter off the back of that from a listener. And it says, it's not often I write to complain, but this immediate response seemed to come from a place of desperation for the people affected. The representative on your programme really made it abundantly clear there is no clarity, realistic understanding of the status quo or vision for what a defective block scheme should provide for homeowners at all currently. As a defective block homeowner, I find it very disconcerting that a government rep of the housing department comes on the radio with no definitive answers to the questions regarding a 10% increase in cap and 6% on square footage increase, or is any comment add of any significance. If the full content is not transparent from the initial announcement, then the Department of Housing should not release the headliner until they are willing to be transparent in the detail in the report, to my view. And I'll continue reading in a moment, but I was a little bit taken aback by Minister Alan Dillon because I kind of got the impression that he wasn't not necessarily familiar with the question that I was asking him, which I found quite surprising considering he was lined up to speak to a station up here and he's from Mayo himself. I could be doing the man a disservice, and if I am, I apologise. But my feeling was that it's not that he didn't have the answer to the question, is that he might not have understood what it precisely was about. I could be wrong. But reading on, in fact, if the roundtable content of a report is discussed, then it is being written up at that time to finalise with revisions as they go. If the 10% increase is already announced to roll out, then you would assume the details are set in stone for the full report to follow that announcement. Let's take the example. If you write a book, market the cover and intro to the story, then you sure of the facts. Then you are sure of the factual content you're promoting because it's already written and ready to publish. How is it possible that a representative came on the radio and really offered nothing, in my view, constructive to the conversation? Fluff around every subject you raised. It's no wonder the people are so frustrated at the defective block's debacle, as these officials are so far from reality in terms of what's going on at ground level. How would anyone have confidence in any short, medium and long-term strategy for the country when it is in a state of inertia at top level on this humanitarian crisis itself? Two more paragraphs here. There's so many flaws in the scheme, believes the listener, too many to write in this email, even from a personal perspective. It's really no wonder the homeowners are taking to the streets again. This is a serious crisis and should be dealt with as an emergency situation here in rural Ireland. The announcement is yet again another media promotion to tick a box, in my opinion. It makes so many people in other areas of Ireland believe we're being treated with a great scheme and big ticket compensation to rebuild. Reality is the opposite. This is not my experience or most of the people that are brave enough to speak out on your show. A large cohort of homeowners will not see any financial gain from this 10% increase in overall cap, as the square footage rates currently depict your grant amount. Rant over, Greg, and thanks for all the coverage you give the people on the ground in Donegal. Heidi, thank you very much for your email. I get where you're coming from and I understand it. Thank you. If you agree, disagree, 086 60 25,000. Now, home care companies operating in Community Health Organisation 1, which includes Donegal, have been informed that the HSE will not fund any additional hours for current home care packages with immediate effect. Jamie Farrelly is Policy and Communications Manager for Home and Community Care Ireland. He joins us on the programme now. Jamie, good morning to you. Thanks for your time.
Hi, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
When was this announcement made?
This was made Thursday before last, so Thursday the 5th. And like I say, the HSE have issued instructions, so it's older people in Donegal who are currently receiving part of a home care package, or the old home help scheme, as it was known, and are waiting for additional hours. So what the HSE are saying is, for budget reasons, those people are not going to receive those extra hours of care that they are on the waiting list for. They will still receive the care they're currently getting, and new home care packages can still be issued. But if you are waiting for a home care package, if you have a home care package now and you're waiting for extra hours, you're not going to receive those. So there's about 100 people in Donegal in this situation. And this happens because normally when a person is assessed for a home care package, they'll be assessed for an hour of care every day, or half an hour twice a day. Usually there's trouble, especially where the HSE deliver a lot of the care. There's trouble getting that care on the weekends and in the evenings, or if a client requires two carers, they can't get the care. So for those people, they are not getting the care for the rest of the need. So basically, there's been a serious error of planning somewhere within Donegal's home care office. Why the HSE have done this is they restricted these extra hours now because they're worried that a couple of months down the line, there'll be no funding for any packages at all. And that means that people waiting in hospital won't get out, because that's really who's getting the home care packages now, are people in hospital, and they're doing that to get them out.
Yeah, but the 100-odd clients that you talk of, people that you talk of, obviously have been assessed, are in a need of additional services, and to learn that certainly in the short to medium term, it seems there's very little hope of that. These clearly are those that are most in need at this time.
Yes, absolutely. So we have the 100 people, and there's another 150 people who are waiting for the full package. Now, like I said, that is still funded, but the question remains, are they going to get their full package? And what is the situation going to look like in 6 weeks, in 2 months, as we really enter the winter rush? How is this going to impact people on the ground? So in the first instance, this is a failure at local level within the HSE. Mm. The CHO1 are responsible for managing their own budget. And for reasons that aren't completely clear at the moment, there's been a failure in modelling or control somewhere down the line. To be fair to the HSE head office, they need to make sure that their departments and their offices are responsible and they're accountable. And we're seeing a similar push with acute care in the hospitals.
So are you saying that, Jamie, before you continue into that, your view is, from what you've seen, this is a mismanagement of the budget, and we're getting perhaps further into the budgetary year, and there's a bit of a panic in that, oh, hold on a second, we could run out of money to fund new care packages if we don't take this measure now?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Because if this was a fundamental problem within the HSE budget, we will be seeing this around the country. So far, we haven't seen this anywhere else in the country. If we do start seeing it across the country, then we need to start asking serious questions about the entire process. But as of now, it's only happening in CHO1, it's only happening in Donegal. Questions need to be asked about that. But in the first instance, we need immediate funding. Either the HSE need to move money around, or the government need to allocate extra money, because right now we've gotten this at its early stages. We haven't felt the impact on the ground. But we do need to deliver this. These people cannot wait another 3 months for care.
What does this sentence mean? Home care hours will be only added to existing packages if they become available as a result of an existing client ceasing service. Does that sound like it reads? Is that if someone dies, the hours can be redistributed?
If someone dies, if someone enters hospital, if somebody's on a short-term home care package, maybe to get them out of hospital, it's not only if they were to pass away, there would be other reasons.
How big are the gaps between what we see here in Donegal in Organisation One versus, say, for instance, the capital?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, in North Dublin, entire North Dublin, there's no waiting list. There's zero on the waiting list. Compared to this, about 250 in Donegal, there's about 650 in CHO1.
Right, so just to be clear, there is no one in Dublin North, did you say? No one in Dublin North waiting for a home care package. So if they need to be discharged from hospital, or whatever the scenario might be, there's an instant home care package in place for them.
Yeah, within a reasonable time, of
Yeah, I
course,
mean,
to be administered.
of
Yeah.
course, yes, but.
And then other areas of Dublin, it's single figures. So it's not just this one CHO9 is North Dublin, but CHO7 and CHO6, we're seeing really low waiting list numbers. And then, as our latest report, the Home Care Data Series shows, what we effectively have is a two-tier home care service. You can almost draw a line. Well, before you could draw a line, starting from Sligo down to Dublin, everywhere above that is doing well, everywhere above that is stagnating,
So everyone
which is what
below
is
that's doing
unfortunate.
well. Everywhere below that line's doing well.
Yes,
And
but this
everywhere.
is until this happened.
Oh, I beg your
This is a
pardon.
real
Okay,
shame because CHO1 was showing good signs of progress. Waiting lists in 2023 went down 14%. There was a 10% increase in delivery. And I think, unfortunately, this is going to send the waiting list right back up. There's no real way of avoiding that. And what the data also shows, though, is once the waiting list gets high, like we see in Cork and we see in the southeast, they'll stay high. So you guys in Donegal were at a crossroads. You were on the right track, and this has really knocked us back.
Right. So just look at the remind us then of the numbers. So currently, what is the waiting list in Donegal for a home care package?
In total, there's 250 people waiting. There's 150 people waiting for a new package, and there's 100 people waiting for additional hours.
Okay. Which obviously then potentially has a knock-on effect on hospital services. The acute hospital, it could be, or what have you as well. Not least, actually, the impact this has on the individuals and their families as well.
Yeah, this could have a huge impact on hospitals. Like I said, that the home care packages have become a really important tool in getting people out of hospital. Hopefully the funding is still there for that. Hopefully that doesn't run out. But like I said, there's a lot of uncertainty at the minute, so we really need to get immediate funding towards. And it's not going to be astronomical, by the way. We don't know exactly how many hours this is. We only have part of the information. We know how many people, not how many hours, but we're talking six figures here. It's not an astronomical sum of money.
And just in relation to the funding additional hours, was a reason given as to why it can't happen in Organisation One?
And I think you first should understand the context, that people will be aware that there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes related to the wider health budget. And there's various, strategies and directives coming out from HSE head office. So I think that's partly to do with this, that what how they modeled at the start is not how they model now because of these things that have happened in the background. But like I said, we need to investigate, we need to allocate funding, we need to really contain the issue, make sure it's only in CHO1. And then we need accountability. We need to stop this happening. I see today the voluntary hospitals calling for multi-annual funding. That would go a long way, the home care sector, to stop this.
In terms of
So it would
planning,
increase
for
the.
planning purposes, like.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're 3-year budget instead of 1-year budget to avoid this. Now, we haven't seen this probably since before COVID, because funding has improved for home care. So this is the first time in 5 years. We don't want to go back to where we were before COVID, where you had two waiting lists, where you're waiting for your funding to be available, and then you're waiting for a carer to be available. We don't want to go back there. We're on the right track of home care. A lot of good things happening nationally. But issues like this we need to resolve. And next in budget 2025, we need to kick ahead and expand the home care sector, because we've had 2 years now without real expansion. So that's having knock-on effects as well.
So, Jamie, just finally to recap, because a recap, you have outlined this before. From your perspective as Policy and Communications Manager for Home and Community Care Ireland, why do you believe 150 are waiting for a care package and now 100 further face a perpetual wait for additional hours on their current home care packages? What is your belief as to what's causing this?
Yeah, like I say, Dublin has no waiting list. So Dublin has seen all the benefits of extra funding. So we need to look at what's the difference between Dublin, what's the difference between Donegal, and population density is the key reason. So you get paid the same rate you do in Donegal as you do in Dublin. But in Donegal, a home care worker can knock out 5 calls in a morning. You cannot do that in Dublin. Carers don't want to drive for 30 minutes to a call. So we need to allocate extra funding. Australia do this, as you know, extremely remote areas. They want the 7, one being North Inner City, Dublin, 7 being the Inishowen Peninsula. And you pay extra to get carers there. I think that makes common sense. Secondly, to go further and pay mileage for home care workers. HSC carers get this, private sectors don't. And then we need to look at using the private sector a bit better. Dublin, it's all private sector. Donegal, it's nearly all HSE. We said there's issues there getting weekend and evening cover. But beyond that, there's a tool there, the private sector, and you're not using that. Donegal just is not using the private sector to knock down these waiting lists.
And it seems they're actually trying to move away from that from conversations I've had with people in the private sector. I'm not saying that's the case, but I've spoken to carers before that believe that the intention in our area is actually to bring this in-house. I presume that was nationally, but it's quite the opposite.
No. Individual HSE offices have huge autonomy in how they run the home care service. So it does, a lot of it comes down to the people who are working in that office, and it's really their call. So obviously, like you say, I wasn't really aware of this, but the people in Donegal are trying to bring it back in. Other parts of the country are trying their best to get the private sector in. And actually other countries in the world, is Sweden, for example, we always say has this great public system. They really have the doors open for the private sector because they want that extra capacity.
Yeah, there's a pattern develops here with these conversations, Jamie. I'm not asking you to comment on this, but, you know, we seem to use, in terms of like the ambulance service, fire service and policing services, we use a model, the same model often in urban areas as we do in rural areas. And it seems we're doing that here with this type of work, in that it is a very different scenario, how someone can live and work and provide these services in an urban setting versus a rural setting. And you've quite clearly outlined the differences there. Would there be much resistance within healthcare to different payment structures dependent on where you are, or is there precedent already in place there? Dublin carers say, well, hold on a second, why are they getting paid more in Inishowen? Or do you think it could work?
I think nationally, we've had this kind of conversation, I think, with teachers. We'd actually put more to pay them at Dublin premium is the opposite way around. I know that the Department of Health are taking the issue of the rural waiting list seriously. I mean, if you look at the data, you can't ignore it. You just can't ignore the fact that the waiting lists are higher in rural areas. So I think there is a growing momentum towards these extra incentives. There will be roadblocks to it, and details to be ironed out.
That being said, I can answer my own question, actually, because particular initiatives were put in place to try and hire occupational therapists and other people working in that area in Donegal. So there probably is a precedent there. We'd see how it play out. All right, Jamie, listen, it's been a very interesting, informative conversation. We do appreciate your time. We watch on with interest. I mean, how far through are we in the budgetary year? Is that clear?
Yeah, the budgetary year will run till the end of 2025. So for these 100 people, they'll be waiting till the end of the year at least to get their care. But like I say, actually, you're probably going to find a much longer waiting list if this keeps on at the end of the year. So there's no guarantee that come January 1st, they'll get their care.
And inevitably, people get tagged onto the end of that list. Because if it's not being serviced, it's a list that only grows. Okay, listen, thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it. Take care of yourself. Okay, let's take a quick break. I'll be back with the weather after these messages. Just to mention of our competition today, you could win a €200 voucher thanks to our friends at Breeden's House to Home, Bridge End and Moville. They're sponsoring the show this week, and we're asking you a little bit of a word jumble. We want you to rearrange these letters, BLEAT or BLEAT, BLEAT, into something that you could purchase at Breeden's House and Home, Bridge End. Text or WhatsApp your answer to 086 60 25,000. We'll draw one of those out of the hat. It's not really a hat, it's like a digital thing, but it's random, and we'll do that later on, and one of you is going to win 200, and there's a 200 Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Texter says, once again, Gregory has to state his view by stating that he doesn't subscribe to a listener's opinion and then tries to backtrack. Gregory is there to represent a show or present a show and not express his personal views. That's not strictly true. By the way, this is not a news bulletin. This is a current affairs show. And of course, I'm bound by certain rules and regulations. I believe this must be in relation to the fact that someone believed that the assassination attempt on Donald Trump was a ruse to bolster his campaign. I'm perfectly entitled to say I wouldn't necessarily subscribe to that point of view and make a comment and then open up to other listeners and to try and trigger conversation and what have you. Estate agents who sold houses that now have defective concrete, should it not be they who should be obliged to repair the house and not the people who bought these houses in good faith and paying a mortgage? Yeah, you would feel. But I think anyone purchasing a house now really would want to be doing robust testing to ensure there's no deleterious materials in there. Hi, Greg. On Friday the 13th, a young woman allowed her dog to foul on a pavement in Guesthouse and Rafoe. Never lifted it, just walked on. This is a very busy area with kids, mums and prams and walkers. If people can't pick up their dog poo, they shouldn't have one. Hear, hear. I agree. If I'm allowed to say that, can't I? I can say I agree that you should be able to pick up your poo. Oh, you should have to pick up your poo. All right, it is the 9 till noon show. Loads more coming up over the next couple of hours. Back after these.